This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Internships have long seemed the natural precursor to employment. Last year, 60% of college graduates who took part in a paid internship received at least one job offer, while 37% of those who took unpaid internships also received offers. But, and this may surprise you, 36% of graduates who did not participate in any type of internship also received job offers. That's a tiny difference for a lot of unpaid work. So, are unpaid internships worth it? Are these young people being taken advantage of by employers who see them as free labor but have no intention of hiring them later? Do these unpaid internships comply with the Fair Labor Standards Act? We're going to talk about the internship economy this hour because our interns decided that that would be a good topic for a show. And you can see our current crop of interns at WFAE.org/CharlotteTalk as they talk about how we are abusing them here at WFAE this summer. With us this hour in our studio, internship director for the Communication Study Department at UNC Charlotte, Stacey Kuntzman, along with Melanie Mossberg, a social worker who says that without her four unpaid internships, she would not be where she is today. Welcome to both of you. Good morning, Stacey.
Good morning.
Morning, Melanie.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. And joining us by phone is Patrick Vernon, Executive Director of the Center for Entrepreneurial Studies and Adjunct Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship at UNC Chapel Hill. Thank you for being with us by phone. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Let me start with the former intern scattered around our desk. Maybe you're all former interns. I don't know, but Melanie identifies herself as a four-time former intern and a four-time unpaid intern. At what stage in your life were you when you worked in those four internships?
I was a non-traditional older student. I was 36 years old when I had my first internship.
And what had you been doing prior to that?
I worked in corporate America for 20 years, kept getting laid off, and decided to pursue higher education. I didn't have a college degree and kind of changed things in my life and worked toward nonprofits.
So in the corporate world where you worked before, had you worked with interns?
I had.
And you saw how what interns did?
I saw what interns did, and in my opinion, it's kind of you get out what you put in.
Mm-hmm.
So you treat it as such of gaining the experience and not having that eye on the prize of the employment at the end of the, you know, at the end of the reign of the internship. I think you'll get more out of it than just trying to please and almost not be yourself. You kind of just fall behind under the radar, or you'll shine. It's kind of a catch-22.
What was the difference for you as a former employee who then became an intern? What was the difference in the way you approached coming to work every day, your demeanor, your attitude, what your reaction to the tasks you were assigned? Because you are obviously you had experience, and many interns don't, and so people just take for granted that they don't know anything, and they just have to talk through everything they have to. Well, you have to explain it to me.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, that was one of the challenges working with executive directors of agencies that look at me and say, oh, wait, you're not a younger student with no experience. You can probably do this job with your eyes closed. So for me, it was really having open communication, open dialogue with all of my executive directors to say, this is what I'm looking to gain. This is what I don't know. This is what I need to learn. Or here's some skills that I know I need to polish up on. How do I get that experience and exposure?
And it took you four internships to get all that?
Well, each internship is required. So two part of my undergrad, one for each term, one
I
for
see.
Each year, and then also in grad school. And the grad school, they're full years.
And they are required.
They are required. That's part of your degree.
Is that legal? Let me talk to the two college people here.
Well, I'm not sure. We do not require internships of all of our students. You know, so I think it really, academically, probably depends upon the college or university. Certainly we stress the importance of internships, but at this point, I know that there are a large number of departments on campus that do not offer internships. So, you know, our particular university does not require, you know, the types of internships that she had.
Patrick?
Yeah, you asked if it's legal. I assume it is. I don't have a law degree, but I know there are several departments at UNC that do require an internship, and I'd be curious to hear from Melanie. It sort of gets to an issue of what the internship is for and who is helping structure it. And I think when the question is it worth it, it does depend. I think Melanie is dead on with you get what you get out of it. But it also helps that going into it, there is some structure, so it's designed that you will get something out of it. I think generally speaking, if a university is requiring it, then the university is taking on a portion of that relationship to make sure there is some structure to make sure that students are learning something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like the interns, I enjoyed watching the interns from your station on their video, and a couple of them from UNC, and you know, I suspect there's a relationship there between our journalism department and our instructors know what they're expecting the students to learn this summer, and they're getting course credit for it.
Well, that's my next question. Since you had to have these four required internships, did you get something? Were they unpaid? They were unpaid.
Correct.
Right?
So they were all unpaid, and yes, I mean, so in undergrad, they were shorter termed. There is a department that supports you, so of course they have leads and connections in the organizations that they're going to place an intern with. In undergrad, you had to write a 3-page paper at the end of your internship.
Mm-hmm.
So there was, and you did in fact get credit for it. Again, in grad school, it was a requirement, and as a social worker, again, you need to work in the field to gain that exposure before you can make an educated decision on what route you want to go in.
Well, you've said that without these four internships, you would not be where you are today.
I would agree.
Explain that.
Knowing what I want and what I don't want. I think going in, even just, you know, a young person going into college thinking they want to major in psychology and they end up being a American studies major or whatever the case may be. When I entered undergrad, and that was in 2008, I didn't know I was going to be go for a master's in social work. That was not the eye on the prize. It was, let me get through this and see where I'm going next.
We've had a couple of interns over the course of time that I've been here who come in because they think they want to do this, and they realize in about a week or two that this is not something that they really want to do. And as a matter of fact, one of them just completely disappeared and never came back. How often does that happen? And I think that's valuable. I think that's an important thing to learn.
Yeah, this is Patrick. I think that's really valuable. That's the whole point. That's a really big issue, is to figure out. They get to test the waters. That's a lot of upside to students getting a chance to test drive a career, particularly ones like in media where it's an unusual kind of career and the demands are not obvious until you're in the studio and you realize what those demands may be, and they may not be a fit for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not 9 to 5, 5 days a week. That's for sure.
Yeah, and back to the credit thing is, the legality question. If you look at the Fair Labor Standard Act, you know, one of the main issues there is that the intern is getting more out of it than the hirer.
Right.
And when you have a university, you know, those relationships that Melanie mentioned, the university provides some leads. There's a paper you write afterward. The university is tracking that. If you came back from an experience and had a bad experience or didn't learn anything, you had a vacuous 3-page paper, the university would advise future students not to go there. They would restructure the experience with that company.
Hmm.
So having that structure in place from a university, I think, is a game changer in terms of the legality. I think the lawsuits you're seeing mostly lately are in entertainment companies that have no structure. You know, students are flocking and willing to work for free for the movie companies, and there's no course credit, there's no structure, they're just doing it because they want to get into the industry. And I do think there's an upside, as you were saying, Mike. I do think they get to learn about the industry, but back to, is it legal? Pretty clear, and the courts have ruled recently on this, it's not legal just to not pay people because they're willing to work for free.
I don't remember when I was – maybe I just wasn't exposed to this when I was in college, but I don't recall anybody ever having an internship, and I don't recall anybody ever talking about internships. Is this – how new is this? How long has this been going on, Stacey?
I think we used to call it temps.
Ah.
To some extent.
But temps were paid.
Internships are largely paid, too. Now, there are a lot of unpaid ones, but I do think that's one culture shift away from temps to internships, and also a lot more pressure on universities, and I'm sure Stacey can speak to this. You know, the universities get a lot more pressure on helping students find jobs now. That, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that wasn't our charge. We gave you a well-rounded education and sent you into the world.
Well, Stacey, it certainly is in North Carolina with what Governor McCrory said a couple of months ago about structuring universities so that when kids get out, they get jobs.
Well, that's right, yes. And I just wanted to speak to what Patrick had said earlier. With regard to credit, I think something that a lot of students need to consider is completing an internship that isn't for credit. And we've spoken a little bit about this. And, you know, it's almost like volunteer work,
mm-hmm.
okay, and so many instances. And in fact, we've had a conversation about we need to be able to define the difference between a volunteer and an intern. And I think that both students and companies need to be cautious about allowing students to intern without credit. Of course, I recognize fully that when students register for credit, of course, they're essentially paying to do the internship. And so because of that, you know, we want to make sure that it's a good fit for both sides. Mm-hmm. But we have had instances where students will complete an internship with a company that isn't for credit. They have problems at the internship, and then they have no real recourse. The university cannot do anything for them.
But then there are these paid internships, and I'm just curious about something. If you are being paid, are you an intern or are you an employee?
You are an intern. I think it's important to think about, and this is the difference between temps and interns, and I think the culture shift toward, you know, what some people call the intern economy. The positive side is, back to your point earlier, Mike, you're learning an industry, and you're test driving whether you want to be in that industry. As an internship, there's an implied contract. You're not a permanent employee, so basically you're a temp, but you're not just being hired to come type or just being hired to come file. You're being hired with an understanding you're learning about an industry or learning about a type of job, and there's a potential of future, not at that firm necessarily. There's no promise of a job for interns. But back to Melanie's point, you go in, you get what you get out of it. You go make yourself indispensable, you might get a job out of it. But if you are paid, paid internships are a very real thing, and anybody who's worked with interns knows, even if you're paying them, it's something you have to deal with. You know, people coming and going is not the ideal labor force if you want a stable office.
I'm sure, Stacy, as internship director of Communication Studies Department at UNC Charlotte, you do a lot of interfacing with companies. So, and I don't know how many of the internships that you have are paid versus unpaid, but in situations where they are or have been paid, what's in it for the company? Why not just hire a temp? Because there are other things that the company is supposed to provide for these interns, if they're interns as opposed to temps, including not necessarily helping the company.
Well, I think a lot of companies in the area want to collaborate with UNC Charlotte. They want to offer these learning experiences to our students. I mean, that's part of community service, I think, that many organizations recognize. You know, their image in the community many times, you know, has to do with how much community service and reaching out to the community. So I like to think of the internships as a company's way of giving back and offering our students learning experiences that they can, you know, grow from and hopefully walk away with a job offer.
What about when you were an intern on those four different occasions? Did you meet people, talk, to make form relationships, create a network that has paid off for you in your job now?
For me, it was building the relationships with the executive directors that I worked with and having them as lifelong mentors. So again, in my daily struggle of trying to figure out where I'm going as a social worker, in the social work realm, you have micro, which is more the clinical base, and the macro, which is more administrative executive director. So in my first year, I did the micro, very small organization, very grassroots. So really learned, you know, that aspect of it. But then I worked for the Children and Family Services Center with Peggy Egan, who was just recently named the DSS director. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was just a powerful validation that I chose the right place to go last year, that I chose the right person to help mold me and become a better professional.
That's Melanie Mossberg, a social worker, a former intern. Stacy Kuntzman is with us. She's the internship director with Communication Studies Department at UNC Charlotte. And Patrick Vernon is executive director for the Center for Entrepreneurial Studies at UNC Charlotte. We're going to take a break and come right back with more Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Diamond Springs, offering bottled water, coffee, and filtration services to the home or office. More information about Diamond Springs at 1-800-715-2286. Ethan Uslan is a throwback to an earlier time, a man on a mission. He is determined to bring back ragtime music, particularly ragtime piano music, and he's been doing a bang-up job of achieving that goal. He's been playing for silent movies and all kinds of other things, and he's the subject of a new documentary. He will join us. We're rolling a piano into the studio tomorrow. He'll join us and share some of his music tomorrow at 9, and then we meet Lucy, Ricky, Ethel, and Fred, the stars of I Love Lucy Live on Stage. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Attorney General Eric Holder says harsh punishment for drug crimes is devastating communities of color. Now he's calling for reforms. Debate over mandatory minimum sentencing.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about interns. Are these internships worth it to the students who participate? The differences between paid and unpaid interns, how companies view them, what they have them do, et cetera, with three people who know this area well. I want to go back to what's in it for companies, because a lot of companies and a lot of people within companies don't really necessarily want an intern. Civic duty aside, they have to do a lot of extra things for these people, and they have to train these people, and these are not people that are going to stick around more than a semester. So you're training people who will ultimately leave you. How do you convince companies it's worth the effort?
Well, I think that the things that an intern can do for a company, I think that they oftentimes bring in fresh ideas. I've had sponsors oftentimes say, you know, we had a project and we anticipated it would take 3 weeks. The student came in and it was done in a week. And so I think that the interns show a real, they're very proactive in many instances. They want to excel, and many times they're overachievers. They get all the work done, and what am I supposed to do next? And so I definitely think that companies recognize that interns do have something that they can offer companies. And so I think that it's kind of a win-win situation. I know you said earlier, you know, it's a lot of work for sponsors. Not everybody wants to. I mean, ideally, that's the way it should be. If it's a good internship, the site supervisor should be hands-on with that intern. That doesn't mean holding their hand.
But you have to look over their shoulder, particularly if they're doing mission-critical work, small.
That's exactly right. I mean, and so being involved, I mean, and so that's a complaint that many interns have, is that their site supervisor will give them a task to complete, and then it's sink or swim. And sometimes that's a good experience to learn, but on the other hand, our students are there to learn as well. And so sometimes, you know, these sponsors, you know, they want interns, but they don't really recognize the time commitment that it takes.
Speaking of which, you had these four internships. How much time were you working in each of those positions while going to school?
So in undergrad, I want to say it might have been 10 hours a week. And as a matter of fact, I don't think it was a matter of hours per week. It was hours for the entire term. So it was a 90-day internship. It was very short. Mm-hmm. In graduate school, it's 16 hours a week. Now, of course, I was...
It's a lot.
It is a lot going to school full-time and juggling part-time employment.
That's a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think there's another element that's the upside for a company, and that is, especially in the fields that we're talking about, any specialized field, you don't want to just hire a temp, a random person from a random agency. One of the hardest things to do for companies is to find talent. And interns, while you budget that they're going to come and go, you assume they're going to come and go, most of them. But you also hope that 1 out of 10 or 1 out of 5 or some number of them is an amazing match. And as Stacy was saying, you get that student that came in and knocked out a project in a week that you thought was going to take 3 weeks. Well, that's 3 weeks that you thought you were going to be paying people to work on that, and you're not. And they've just added value to your company.
Right.
So it's a way of, we mentioned earlier, students are auditioning different professions and different companies, but companies are auditioning people. And when you have, you know, when hiring talent is a core competency of almost any company. And in business programs, for example, the internship programs are paid summer internships are the system for figuring out if you want a student to work for you full time. You spend your summer between, you know, before your last year doing an internship at a company, and the hope is that you like each other and it is a fit. So that audition piece of specialized talent, who has chosen you, you know, you're going through Stacy's program, you're a very specific type of student coming out of a prestigious college, not just a temp somewhere.
Well, the other thing, too, I think, especially an upside for any organization, is in this day and age, you know, there's long processes between background checks and orientations and, you know, getting a new employee up to speed. And, you know, the plus side for any organization is you've bypassed all of that. You know, your intern had to go through all of this, and whether it's, you know, a 1 week process or a 6 week process, yeah, boom, they're you ready to go and hit the ground
running. You've gotten to know them. They've gotten to know you. You've seen their work ethic, et cetera. One critic of these internships has said that some of these programs require that interns have companies require that interns have prior experience, skills in computers or other particular areas, and he says that's wrong. What should potential interns come equipped with, if that's wrong? We've got to have some skills.
Right. And it really depends on the level of the type of specialized skills you're looking for. If you have no skills and you're looking for some skills, and in some ways you are a temp, and being a temp might make more sense than being an intern. I tend to think of internships as more specialized. You're looking for a specific thing in a specific place. So you need to be able to add value when you arrive.
And you say, Patrick, you're more in favor of the paid internships, if I'm not mistaken, than you are the unpaid ones. And you say
I just
that
don't like breaking the law, and as I understand the law these days,
okay,
you got to pay unless now these systems we've just talked about, where a university is involved and it's for credit and there is structure, that's no problem. I believe also nonprofit organizations and maybe governmental organizations can legally have unpaid interns. And I work a lot with startups, and they love unpaid interns. And I don't know the legalities of it. I would hope that they would get an exemption as well. But just these recent court rulings, and again, they've mostly been in the entertainment business,
right,
where I think we can all imagine it can easily get taken advantage of. I mean, there are types of industries where students will flock and be willing to work for free, and that doesn't seem fair. And I think the Fair Labor Standard Act makes sense to apply there.
Well, there are people in the entertainment industry who are looking for jobs who are willing to work for free.
The thing is, I think it's short-sighted for a company who has money. Now, a startup, I believe they should be exempt, because if it's two guys working out of their garage and they actually aren't even paying themselves, it doesn't make a lot of sense to pay an intern.
Yeah.
But if it's a company that has money, then I think they're short-sighted in not paying, because they're investing in many other ways. We've just talked about how difficult it can be, and if you've worked and a mid-sized organization and you have interns, you know how sometimes it can be that juggle come April. Like, who has to deal with the intern this summer?
Right.
It's just not always a coveted thing to be the person responsible for the intern.
And I want to stress that you view these people as investments.
And that's the thing. You need to. You should. I think some companies see it as free labor, and that's the mistake. I don't think it's a good source. I don't think it's a good investment in that sense. You don't really realize the time you're already investing. You know, what is minimum wage, the cash that you'd be giving the student, versus the commitment that you're spending as an organization, as well as the risk you're taking, back to your point about if they're doing mission-critical work and they can mess something up, it's worth $8 an hour to have it, let them know their value in that sort of fair labor kind of way.
Do you want to add to that, Stacey?
Yeah, I wanted to speak to what Patrick mentioned regarding startups and companies really taking responsibility for an intern. If they want an intern, it is a time commitment. But with startup companies, you mentioned, if it's out of your home, what I've discovered is that in most instances, students do not feel comfortable completing work at someone's home. If there's not a physical location where they can go and complete their work, oftentimes the experience is not as beneficial. Certainly you do have some students, they're self-starters, they're independent, they can complete work virtually. But even then, I think there's something to be said about learning about communication, about how to be professional when you're in the workplace and you need to be at a workplace.
Talk to me about how you match students to companies for their own particular needs, educational needs, and their own aspirations for careers later on. How do you do it?
Yeah, well, within communication studies, we do not place students. So I have a list of about 500 sponsors. Mm-hmm. Okay. Most of those sponsors are in Charlotte. And we do categorize the sponsorships it's our tracks, but essentially emphasis areas within communication studies. So we have PR, we have journalism, we have mass media, we have organizational health communication and public advocacy. And so as the sponsorships come in, we have these categories, and they're essentially based on the work that you would complete in that internship. So obviously if you're doing a PR internship, you would be expected to write press releases and so forth. So my job is when students come to see me is to, first of all, confirm that they're eligible to do an internship for credit. This assures that the student is adequate adequately prepared to step into an internship with the skills that they would need, because they're not just representing themselves, right? They're representing the department and the university. And so our standard would be you have to be a junior or senior. You need to have a 2.0 GPA or higher, although some sponsors will require a higher GPA than that, but the departmental standard, 2.0 or higher. You need to be a comm major, communication major or minor. And then there are certain courses according to the emphasis that a student would pursue. So, again, if they're pursuing public relations, then they are expected to take certain courses and have those courses completed before they would do an internship.
And what do you tell young people about how they should approach their internship?
Very much like Melanie has already mentioned, you get out of it what you put into it. I always tell students, research the companies that you want to work for. I have a bulletin board with all of these names on it, but sometimes names really don't mean anything. You need to really think about what you want out of an internship. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, inevitably, it's going to be a better experience. I mean, I have many students who will come, and they just want to get it out of the way. They just want to get the credit. They'll say, well, I don't know, just send me something. And I can do that, but I think, again, it's just not as a meaningful experience.
Melanie?
And I think when you get that connection, whether it's through your field placement office or you're doing it on your own, you're going to have a meeting, whether it's with the HR representative or an intern coordinator or the actual person you're going to be working for. Treat it as a job interview. Ask all the questions that you need. What's the dress code? What's expected of me? What are the hours? All the basic information that you would need to make a decision if this is going to be a right fit for you. What am I going to be doing in my everyday activities? What are my deadlines? You know, who to do? Am I working alone? Am I working with a team? All those things that you would need to know to be successful in that internship so you're not setting yourself up for failure.
Do students turn down internships? After they go through that process of asking those questions, do they ever say, nah, this is not for me?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, with regard to that, what will happen is when a student sees me, okay, they'll say, I want these types of contacts. They have to request the interviews. They go to an interview, and they may get more than one offer. But I think students more and more are recognizing you need to ask the right questions in the interview. Yeah. Because many times you look at the job description, oh, that looks great. And then there are many other facets that really influence that internship experience. Again, the number of people you're working with, the amount of experience, the person that is overseeing your internship. So there's a lot of facets to that.
I said in the beginning that something like 60% of the young people who have paid internships go on to get jobs, 37% of unpaid interns go on to get jobs, while 36% of unpaid interns also, 36% of those who don't have any internships also go on to get jobs. So that begs the question, how important are these internships to people coming out of college who want to get jobs when they graduate? Are they important?
I believe they are. Go ahead, Patrick.
I think it depends on the field. I think those numbers represent, I think, too wide of a net to understand exactly how it would affect an individual. If you come out with a general degree and you have no idea what you want to be doing, I'm not surprised that one of the internships you might have done that didn't pay does not affect your employment situation. Like you mentioned earlier, Mike, it might have been a student that came in and realized that's not the field for them. So the fact that they don't have a higher placement number, you know, come May 2013 when they graduate, I don't think is indicative of lack of value in a process.
Did you learn something different or something that built on what you previously learned in each of your succeeding internships, Melanie?
Yeah, well, and the one thing I wanted to add to that was, for me, I'm going from a corporate resume to a resume with just internships. So on paper, your average hiring manager thought I was 24, 25 years old.
But you had a corporate resume. I mean, that does count for something.
But you don't include that if
you're... Why not?
Because you're going for a nonprofit interview with just the skills that you need for that particular job. So I can't have a 4-page resume. I now have to narrow it down to, you know, 1 to 2 page max. There's not a lot of room to incorporate that corporate experience that I had. Some of the basic skills, absolutely. But at the end of the day, you know, that was one of the distinguishing factors where I struggled on paper, is without you getting in front of a hiring manager, an HR manager, to say, hey, wait a minute, red flag. I'm 40 years old. I have 20 years corporate experience. However, I'm now restarting in the nonprofit world, and this is what I've gained in exposure and experience. Now I want a job as a social worker.
Mm. so, do you know how they regarded, how prospective employers regarded your internships on your resume, and how they are, to broaden the question out beyond Melanie, how they are regarded by employers of anybody who's looking for a job who's also been an intern?
For me, I mean, again, as a social worker, it's critical, because you're not going to get hired without that experience. You know, paid or unpaid, it's irrelevant. To be a social worker, no one's going to hire you off the bat without experience.
Okay.
I think it's fair to say then, in that context, it's a part of the educational process, you know. And one thing I'd like to point out is that cash isn't the only currency. You mentioned, Mike, you know, do students sometimes turn down the opportunity? And they absolutely do. It depends on what they're going for. And if you come in, as Melanie did, a little bit later in life, and you know what you're going after specifically, then you make sure you have exposure to the executive directors. You know, exposure to decision makers is part of what students who know what they're going for are going for. They want to meet potential mentors. They want to meet people who can teach them kind of the ropes in this business. And it's not just going to be a bullet on their resume. It's going to be a potential referral. You know, somebody that when they go get their next job, they can call up that person and say, you know, did I do a great job? And that person is a name that people in that industry know.
And for me personally, and, you know, I name dropped earlier, but with that particular mentor, I mean, that's a mentor for life. Through the original job process right after I finished and graduated, you know, here I am 40 years old with no nonprofit paid experience. And every job I applied for, I emailed her, I called her, and I said, hey, what do you think of this? Do I have the right skills? What, you know, again, do I need to apply for mid-management? Am I at that level because of my corporate experience, or do I have to start from scratch and kind of be entry level and just be humble and go with it?
I didn't have an internship as a young person. I didn't know anybody who had one, never heard of internships till I got out of college. But I do know, getting into this business, what I did as a young person, and that was hang around radio stations and soak up as much like a sponge as I could and ask questions and just be there.
There you go. You were an unpaid intern.
Well, yeah, I wasn't doing anything. I was just hanging around, talking to people on the air and off the air and stuff like that. But I'm curious about this because we've had a series of interns. We have a tremendous, and I'm not just saying this because two of them are sitting in the studio right now, but we've had a tremendous group of interns this summer who've done significant work and who've actually produced some shows and who interface with me and other people. But what I've noticed over the years is a lot of our interns do not, and I don't know whether that's a generational thing or whether that's because they're interns and they're shy or they don't want to, you know, ripple the waters or whatever, but they don't ask questions.
Back to, yeah, that's you've hit the point, though. When they come in and it works, it can be amazing. I mean, these interns who, for whom it went well, have done things that interns don't usually get to do. They have not just resume points, not just bullet points on their resume. They've got life experiences now that they can speak to in their next job interview. And that's a golden opportunity for a young person.
And I mean, we like people,
them. Yeah, and you'll call the next, if you have a job opening, You'll call them first, and B, if you know anybody, and it's certainly very hard to get into your industry, so as they call around, to have that reference is golden.
So what do you tell young people? Do you tell them to ask questions? Do you tell them to hang around beyond their internship?
Absolutely tell them to ask questions, and particularly, as you were mentioning earlier, in the interview process, this is a fit game. You're trying to find out just as much. You're not just going to get hired. An internship is not a career. It's not to pay the rent. It's kind of a part of your education before you've gotten that career.
Well, you mentioned not paying the rent, and that leads to a whole other couple of issues that I want to get into in the next segment, which we will, with Patrick Vernon, Executive Director of the Center for Entrepreneurial Studies at UNC Chapel Hill. Also with us in our studio, Stacy Kuntzman, Internship Director for Communication Studies at UNC Charlotte, and Melanie Mossberg, a social worker and four-time former intern. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Rabun Law Firm, representing individuals who bring legal actions under the False Claims Act and related whistleblower laws to expose fraud against the federal and state government. Details at usfraudattorneys.com. Speaking of attorneys, Attorney General Eric Holder says harsh punishment for drug crimes is devastating to communities of color, and now he's calling for reforms. Diane Rehm and her guests look at the debate over mandatory mandatory minimum sentencing coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation about interns, perhaps you are an intern, were an intern, would like to be an intern, now's your time to join the conversation. 704-926-WFAE, 800-603-WFAE, which is 9323, or WFAE.org/CharlotteTalks. And by the way, you can see our bumper crop of interns on our website at WFAE.org/CharlotteTalks. We're coming right back.
When a person is technically an adult but struggling with mental or emotional issues, it can be tough to let someone else take the reins, even when it's for their own good.
Financially, any money he had would be gone, whether it was 20 cents or $20 million.
The difficult world of conservatorship, next time on Marketplace from APM.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with Stacey Kunstman, Melanie Mossberg, and Patrick Vernon. In the break, Melanie said, can we take the words young people out of the conversation? Because today, not all interns are young. And you bring up a good point. The economy has tanked. A lot of people have shifted gears in terms of looking for new employment, and internships become something that they do to learn.
Yeah, I mean, in graduate school, I would say the majority of folks that I was going to school with had graduated with their bachelor's, had already gone into the work field, then went back for their master's, or those like myself that worked in a different career altogether and now are shifting gears, and they're in their, you know, 40s, 50s, or 60s.
No matter how valuable these internships can be, some people can't afford, particularly in a certain city, you can't afford to take an unpaid internship. How could you live in Manhattan, for instance, and pay the rent and be an intern and go to college? How can you do that? So do these unpaid internships shut a lot of people out of learning about the industry that they might be interested in going into, and shut out the very people who probably need those jobs the most?
For me personally, I had to take out extra private loans. That's the only way I got through college. It was very hard for me to secure a full-time job with school.
But today you're a social worker and you're making a fortune.
Absolutely. But it was important to me, and that was a decision I had to make. How do I just get by to get through school? I knew it was a sacrifice, but I did it. And
yeah, Mike, I think it's partly because I work at a university, I guess. It's hard for me to separate the internship concept from the educational process. And that it's, you know, I think Stacey mentioned earlier, students are effectively paying to go work somewhere if it's an internship for credit. And by the way, they're paying all year to learn. If the university is involved and it's for credit and unpaid, then I think the answer is you figure it out just like you figured out everything else about your education. And yes, anything about getting an education means for the resource constrained, you've got a disadvantage, clearly. And maybe you need a paid job that is different than this unpaid if you're getting something for credit. The other thing is, I don't know about Stacy's program, certainly in ours, there's the opportunity to get these required internships during the school year. And it's and I think Melanie mentioned hers was 10 or 16 hours a week. That's not the same as the full-time summer thing. But it is, you know, probably precludes you from having a side job if you need to make money while you're in school.
So that precludes a lot of people who just can't. They've got to have a job, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't see how you don't do that. But the same argument is carried through the whole educational process. I mean, tuition, not being able to work full-time because you have to go to school.
But I read an article yesterday, and this took place in Manhattan, where people you had to have these internships to get ahead. And if you couldn't do them, then you weren't going to be considered because you had – and that yours is a good example. You had to have an internship. And some people just simply couldn't do it. And one of the speakers at this conference was a young person who had done these internships. And he simply said, well, if you don't do it, then it means you don't want to do it. So just get over yourself. And then they asked him how he did it. He said, well, while I was here, I lived in my parents' spare apartment. Well – that's a little privilege, isn't it?
But I went to school with folks that were single parents that work full-time jobs,
right,
full internships, supported their family, and went to school full-time. I mean, the bottom line is there's sacrifices you have to make to get to where you need to go.
Things in the real world have value because of what you pay for them. If something is free, it's not valuable. If you have free tickets to something, you may not go because something comes up. But if you bought those tickets at $40 a ticket – you're going to be in the seat. Are paid interns viewed as more valuable to employers as more so than unpaid interns?
I get this question all the time, particularly because I might have an MBA student who might be paying $50,000 in tuition talking to a startup to get zero, and who is offering no money for a 12-week summer internship. And the question is, does that mean that they will be perceived as not adding value? And I think there's two sides to that. One is, cash is not the only currency. And when you go through the interview process, both sides have to explain how they're going to create value for the other side. And cash is one way you do that. And I mentioned earlier, if you're going to a mid-sized company and they have money, and I even tell students, if it's not a startup anymore, they've been around for 3 years and they've got a staff of 20 people, you should be getting paid. But if it is a startup and they're not even paying themselves, cash is not the only currency, but there is a danger that you will be perceived as willing to work for free. You have to make sure that you communicate why you are doing it, what you demand from it. And by the way, if you're not getting paid, I do think, and particularly if it's not structured by your university, if you're not getting paid, you need to tell the company what you want out of it, and you need to be proactive about making sure your experience is what you want it to be.
And Stacey, you're nodding vigorously through all this, and I'd be interested in hearing your points on this, but also, do paid interns get paid more when they get hired than the free interns when they get hired?
Yeah, that's been my experience, is that students who intern for a company and then get a job offer are salaried or salaried plus commission. So I definitely think it works for the students.
But do the people who were paid interns get paid more going in than the people who were unpaid interns?
That I can't speak to. I don't know necessarily. I think the experience, obviously, is what gives you the edge to get into the company. But I'm not entirely sure what research says, you know, if you've had an unpaid internship.
I don't like, you know, Mike, I would say be careful not to overvalue cash as the only way you're getting compensated.
Okay.
If I wanted to go, you know, into a very specialized, interesting field in communications, I may make less money than doing something else. So the amount of money getting paid, I don't think is the right metric. Being in the field, being in your dream job, being in the geographical area you want to be in, having the lifestyle you want to have, all of these are questions that you have to answer. In addition to, you know, are you making the money you want to be making?
I just wanted to speak to that really quickly, something that Patrick said earlier, you know, asking the right questions in the interview. I tell my students, if it's an unpaid, if it looks, and generally I have the information to know whether it's paid or not, you can always ask. Ask if they're willing to pay. You know, you can explain your situation. Listen, I have a full-time job. I'm attending class full-time. Can you at least give me a stipend at the end of the internship? Will you pay for my gas? Will you pay for parking? I think those are reasonable questions to ask. All they can say is no. And I've had many students, in fact, ask the question, and they get it. And they'll say, yeah, well, we can give you at least a stipend.
Let me take a phone call here from Keith in Charlotte. Welcome, Keith. Keith, go ahead.
Hi there.
Hi.
Again, I was very interested when you said that interns these days don't seem to ask a lot of questions oftentimes. And I agree. I think that that's one of the most important things that I've seen as I've had people ask for internships through my management levels. But anyway, I guess that draws into question, what are the schools themselves that set up these internships are doing to make sure that these people, young people, have the technical skills or the questions, that the ability to ask those questions.
Yeah, because a lot of these kids grew up in a virtual environment and they don't really interact verbally. They interact by texting and tweeting and all that sort of stuff. So I think that really is a difference here. And many of them want to be in the corner office as soon as the internship is over. So how do you tell them how to interact with people in the workplace?
Well, you know, we have a number of resources on campus. Our Career Center is excellent, and they have resume workshops. They offer mock interviews and so forth. So I consistently will encourage students to go to the Career Center, make sure that you're ready to ask the right questions. And, I will tell students, here are some questions that you may be asked to at least prepare them. But I think getting that practice, and many times it's just going on the interview, you know, and again, it's through the experience of a number of interviews that will help you to determine the types of questions you need to ask.
Let me share with you some things that have come in over the web and emails, etc., during the show. Marsha on the web writes, my son just came back from a summer of work in the gas industry in North Dakota. Not only did he get credit hours, but he pocketed over $1,700 every week after taxes. I want that job. I'm not sure that he will choose to work in that industry after graduating, but his primary goal was to make money to pay for his college expenses. Overall, a win-win. Ellen on the web, one of my daughters was required to complete an internship as part of her major. Although her department did help her get it, it was unpaid and only somewhat related to her major. She received 6 hours of credit. Since it was for credit, we were required to pay tuition for the credit hours. The out-of-state tuition bill was several thousands of dollars. This was an unfortunate surprise to us, and the value was definitely not there. Internships are only valuable if they relate to the type of work you want to do long term. Agree or disagree?
I completely disagree, because for me, moving from undergrad to grad school, still not in undergrad knowing where I was going. So just getting any nonprofit experience and exposure for me was key. Because maybe after all, I was moving in the wrong direction. And so was it worth it to pursue a master's degree if I'm going to end up going back to corporate America? And that's where it was a better fit for me.
Anybody else want to comment on that?
Well, I would agree that when you have a big program and you have hundreds of students who are required to do internships, you absolutely will have some that don't have great experiences. And you'll certainly have some parents who paid the tuition that aren't going to be happy about that wasn't a great experience. That there are a lot of responsible parties in that scenario, the student being one of them. And so you can imagine there are students who have this requirement who take a crappy job and do a crappy job and didn't have a great experience, and their parents aren't happy about it.
Well, I had a bad experience in an anthropology class, too, but, you know.
Yeah, so, but, you know, back to part of the question was, what do universities do to make sure these are good experiences?
Yeah.
And there are controls in place, but you can't control everything. And we certainly, you know, I'm sure in Stacy's program, they don't have 15 counselors, you know, for this one program. They've got a list of firms that have been participating, as we do here at Chapel Hill, and we know who's good. And when we hear somebody's not good, we take them off our list. But every year is a new negotiation. It's a fresh batch of students, and all the companies are in a new situation.
Okay. Courtney on Facebook writes, I hope you will also discuss the value interns can bring to a company outside of their free labor. Interns often bring in fresh new ideas that companies can benefit from. Stacy, you have a smile on your face.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what I had mentioned earlier. I think that students definitely, by and large, recognize that they need to have some experience, not just a degree. And I always tell students, what sets you apart from all of the other applicants that will apply for that job? And if you have two resumes and one has internship experience and one doesn't, I can't help but think that I would be drawn towards the person that's got the internship experience.
And then I'd call probably whoever she worked for and find out if it was a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's certainly helpful to have that extra point of reference about an individual, you know, in their career search.
A fellow named Ray tweets, I have had 3 unpaid internships. While the skills and networking were valuable, I still don't have a job.
And, you know, to speak to that, it is what it is. It took me technically 7 additional months after I graduated to find the job that I'm in now. It was a lot of patience. I joke that I had to stalk some of the hiring managers at my employer. But it is. It's a matter of networking. It's a matter of, like I joked, in the company I work for, it's one of the largest in the Carolinas, and they have HR recruiters. So if you don't get in front of the right person, you just don't get the job. And I short of sending them pizza and say, hey, I know you're all busy today, but I need somebody to look at my resume because I know I fit the right qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
I am the right person for the job. So kind of going above and beyond, but I was just going to go back to talking about internships, and for any person of any age, you need to advocate for yourself, and you need to stick up and say, you know, this might not be the right thing for me. Let me get out of this before it's too late, and or talk to those folks that you're reporting to or supporting and saying, I need to learn these skills. This is what I need to move further in.
And interestingly enough, the relationship of internships to jobs is not exactly a solid line. The Fair Labor Standards Act stipulates that internships must be structured and supervised like vocational education and must be for the benefit of the student and not the company. But it also says interns cannot be promised jobs at the end of their unpaid experience. Why not?
Well, I think that really is meant to protect the companies. And in many contexts, I think that, as Melanie had pointed out earlier, I mean, if it's expected that you're going to, you know, I just don't know how beneficial the experience is going to be.
The Fair Labor Standards Act also says that work done by interns must not be work that a regular employee would routinely perform. Now, that seems silly to me, because in that case, the work that would seem to be work that has little or no value, because it's not work that would regularly be performed, or it were work that would be work that they would love to do if only they could hire somebody to do it, so they would hire somebody to do it and not have an intern. Or, on top of that, the intern, it seems to me, would get much more valuable experience from doing work that actually needs to be done.
I agree. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure how an internship would offer a good learning experience unless you're actually getting the hands-on. We mentioned that before. You know, the value of an internship beyond the monetary, going for an internship that's paid. But, I mean, you have to consider, I mean, again, the whole conversation here about how students make the best of their internship experience, and I just think that just looking at a paid internship is just not the best sort of way to go.
For me, in graduate school, both of my internships never could have imagined where my job would go, where my experiences would go, and what the expectations were. It was kind of what I made it. So although they said, you know, I might need some help here, I came to them and said, I have this idea, will this work? I see some, you know, contracts that could be redone, can I do that? Really taking it upon myself to go that extra mile and to shine. But also for me, it was getting experience I didn't necessarily have before. I redid a website for a nonprofit, and I didn't have experience doing that before, but excelled. And again, it's a win-win. It's a win for you. You gain the experience. It's a win for the company because they get something that's of added value that they wouldn't have had
this. Yeah, these rules from the Department of Labor and the Fair Labor Standards Act come from the 1940s. So how did we go from that, where it clearly says that, you know, what it says, but then we have people suing Fox Searchlight Pictures who say they should have been paid for their work on Black Swan, and the courts agree and say you have to be paid in certain situations? What kind of an impact will that have going forward?
I don't think that's going to – I think it's going to have a big impact for big media companies, who I do think have been abusing the system. And the three of us have not been talking about these sort of little armies of people, this hush-hush internship economy where they are bringing people in, and they have displaced actual employees.
And let me stop you there because I have to. Patrick Vernon is Executive Director of the Center for Entrepreneurial Studies at UNC Chapel Hill. Stacey Kunstman, Internship Director for the Communication Studies Department at UNC Charlotte. And Melanie Mossberg, a former intern.